I'm having problems with them.
No, this is our daughter-in-law's.
Ah, okay. I've heard some people that I know who do a lot more canning than I do have problems with the seams with them this
like
year.
Like this year?
Oh, no. Yeah, like this year where there's a lot of bubbles, there's weird like glass seams, and they're breaking in. Really dangerous for pressure canning, but even if you're not doing pressure canning, having just structural problems with the ball jars this year.
We better go back to the Masons. They know how to do it.
If you got Masons or Wex, you're probably in better. They've been having better luck with those.
Yeah, just check the seams before throwing them in.
One more thing to be worried about.
Yeah, right. Well, it's time for another Local Hero Spotlight with Jennifer Kaur, the new executive director of CESA, the Local Hero folks, community involved in sustaining agriculture. And we are at the top of Coyote Hill in Bernardston with Gloria and Irvin Melulaney. And your story about coming to farming here is really, really interesting. But let's start with the farm. So you started Coyote Hill Farm back in 2003?
Yes.
This was a lifelong dream for you, Irvin. Yes. What were you doing before 2003?
We worked in Boston at Harvard Medical School, and Gloria worked at Brigham and Women, and we were lab techs, and I got an early retirement when I was 55, and Harvard was nice enough to give me health insurance until I was 65, so it worked out.
Yeah, and what were you doing at Brigham and Women's, Gloria?
Research.
For what?
Cystic fibrosis, looking for a vaccine for people that have cystic fibrosis.
Still working on that, or is it?
That is ongoing, as far as I know. It's not an easy thing to figure out.
No. Yeah. And what were you doing, Irvin?
I was doing histology, study of tissues.
What kind of tissues?
It was animal tissues. It was we were the path lab for all the animals that research uses at Harvard, and if anything was sick, it came through our lab, and we'd discovered why it was dying or why it was sick. And it was great. I loved it for 25
years. And that's why you're a vegetable farmer now?
Yes.
Talk about this segue from medical research of various types to farming.
So much science.
It is science. Both science.
But this was a dream of yours.
This was a dream all the way from when I was a kid working on a dairy farm.
Where was that?
It was in Monterey, a little town. In the southern Berkshire, 600 people. Three dairy farms. I worked on two of them.
And you get swept up in this dream, Gloria, or was it your dream as well?
I did. I got swept.
Uh-huh. Are you currently still swept? Living the dream?
I am. Yes, I am. I'm still here. Still loving it. Yeah.
Why to produce instead of dairy farming?
Dairy farming is hard work.
You were retired already. I want to do what work, not hard work.
How dairy people do it.
Yeah.
It's very hard work.
Yeah.
Did you contemplate dairying for a while?
Okay. No. It was always, always vegetables,
So you were already familiar with Western Mass, having been from the Berkshires, so what made you want to come here to Bernardston?
Well, we found the land. We started out in Worthington, which is a little hill town, with my partner, and we were young hippies, and we were going to do, you know, commune. Oh, we had great ideas, but our females didn't get together well. And so I sold out to him, and we came out here and found this land for, like, what was it, $8,000 for 27 acres.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
and you were saying this was all forested.
All
when you got here.
Woods, yeah.
It's still very forested.
Yeah,
but
we got about 3 acres cleared.
Can we walk that way and see the beds and stuff?
Let's go for a little walk.
Such a nice scene down
there. Yeah, you've got this house over here, which your son lives in?
Yes.
And he's also, what's he doing? He's working in Boston too, right?
He's working at Boston College in development. Yeah.
Is that just the way that things go? You start in academia and then you end on the farm.
Yeah.
That's a good way to do it.
I have to say, a lot of the postdocs that I work with were envious. They would love to work on a farm.
Well, you've got plenty of land. You could start that commune you wanted to start there, Irvin. Bring out all the doctors.
That's right.
Even more interesting at this stage of life, I think.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to note all these weeds. Volunteer on their own.
We can call that biodiversity.
Yes, it's good for the pollinators.
Gestures broadly for the pollinators.
Yeah. You're still doing your CSA here on site.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yep.
And you have everyone picks up here on the farm.
About how many people do you have in your CSA?
20. I think it's
22.
I know it's not a whopping number, but it keeps us busy
as like a neighbor.
neighbor to you all. I know your CSA is a highly coveted thing. Lots of people want to stay with it, and these are treasured spots. So 20 is not nothing.
What's, say, available this week for the CSA?
We have a great bag this week. We had melons and raspberries and corn and peaches, carrots, and Gloria puts together a bouquet of flowers every week.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
We're walking by your little, your apple orchard here right now.
Apple orchard. Yeah.
When you bought the land, were the trees here? Because apples are...
They look like this.
Oh!
They all look like oak trees and things like that.
These were planted by Irvin.
In those earliest of years, these are 25-year-old trees.
As soon as he got here.
Yep. 79. So it's been a long time.
Oh, so you had the land for lots of years before you started the farm.
Yes, this we bought in 79.
Now $8,000 makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Well, I was like, $8,000 in 2003? What the heck?
What a steal. And like this, and the trees also make more sense. And I'm like, you got these trees to establish in 20 years like this? That's amazing.
I know, they already look like a very well-established old apple orchard here. So well done. Way to think ahead there.
So about half our apple trees produced this year, and about half didn't. I don't know why that is, but we are organic, and so the apples have a lot of blemishes.
Love it.
The ones that are producing seem to be producing a lot. Yeah. You've got this one tree that's just covered.
Yeah. That's a Golden Delicious apple.
We're at Coyote Hill Farm in Bernardston with Irvin and Gloria Melulaney and a Local Hero Spotlight with Jennifer Kaur from CESA. Was this place called Coyote Hill Farm before you got here?
No.
You name it.
No. We named it.
Yeah.
Because we, the coyotes would gather on that hill, and we would watch them with their cubs.
Uh-huh.
And it was nice to see. So we called it Coyote Hill Farm.
We're going to stop our daughter-in-law here in a minute because I want you to see the tomato harvest.
Yeah.
Oh. She's got it in the bags.
We're hitchhiking now into a John Deere tractor. We're from the radio. We mean you no harm. What's your name?
Jill.
Jill Monty.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Jennifer. Hi.
I love how your tractor is stocked. You've got bug spray. Oh, yeah. You've got baskets.
Water.
Like, you're all set.
You got work gloves. You got all of it. What do you got in the back here, though, Jill?
Tomatoes.
Oh, those are pretty.
Yeah, you got some heirloom tomatoes. Yep. You got some cherry tomatoes.
I want you to look at the size of that one, Monty.
Well, that is a giant tomato. A tomato as big as your head, they say. It's been so dry, so I'm imagining that they're going to be really kind of extra sweet.
They are delicious. Yep.
And these tomatoes are actually called coyotes.
Coyote Hill Farm. Yeah. So they're branded tomatoes. Trademark. Yeah. Melulaney.
What day is your pickup for the CSA?
Sundays and Tuesdays. And then we have two markets that we do, one in Northfield on Thursdays and one on Saturday morning in Bernardston.
Did you always want to be a CSA farm, or
no,
did you start out?
We didn't know what a CSA was.
Yeah.
And we had friends who said, can we come by with get a bag? And we said, sure. So we started off with two people. It's different than most CSAs. They still come and put their $20 under their card every week instead of paying up front.
Oh, interesting.
Because that's the way we started.
So you're doing Northfield and Bernardston Market, both like very local, relatively
very local.
Like
we're,
small.
We're the only vegetable vendors in both markets.
Whoa!
It's a very big deal in terms of like place making and the vibrancy of a market.
Yeah. And getting fresh local vegetables from a farm to those two communities, especially if you're the only ones doing it. Jill, Khalees has a warning for you about your ball jars.
Oh,
like alert.
It's not alert, it's just that be careful. So I've heard things about the manufacturing of bell jars this year. Check your seams. People have been having problems with them exploding.
Yeah, if any of the tomatoes are going in there, you don't want to have a tomato emergency. What keeps you wanting to do this? I don't want to ask how old you are, but we know you retired at 55, and we know that the farm started in 2003, so we can do some math here. What keeps you wanting to do this? Farming is hard work.
It is, but we have great new help.
You got Jill married into the dream.
Yeah. So, it's good work. I mean, it keeps you healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's outside.
You can do it.
Wonderful work. I wish more people could do it instead of being in offices, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And somebody who's been in labs and offices, I can see, you can see, you have the actual real-time life experience to tell us the right way to do it. So when I'm editing this at my desk at NEPM, I'll think, I should be out there picking apples right now.
Anytime.
What about Jill as the daughter-in-law of the Melulaneys? Is this this a career path for you going forward?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love it. And I don't think they realize how much I would love it when I moved out here. And
where did you move from?
Boston.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we just moved out here a year ago,
uh-huh.
my husband and I. Yes.
What were you doing in Boston?
I was a waitress.
Okay.
And my husband is actually in Boston now at his job.
Yeah.
He will be back working from home, but we both enjoy it very much.
So he does some farming too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he does all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, yeah, he does the heavy lifting.
So he gets the benefit of having both a desk job and a farming
yes.
job. So he can really
As we've
it.
Mentioned, this is the family way. You start in the lab and you grow into the farm.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about your practices and sort of what is important to you two about the way that you farm.
Well, we are organic, and I'd love to go no-till. We buy one load of compost from Martin Farm.
Yeah.
Which is expensive.
That's where all my compost goes, so you're welcome.
We have to fight the critters. There's a lot of deer, a lot of rabbits, raccoons you'll see up here if we go up here.
Yeah, let's go.
We fence the corn.
Oh, and you have another greenhouse back here.
Yeah, this is... The feds actually gave us a grant for this. They were giving grants out back in those days.
Uh-huh. Now they're giving grants out and then taking them back.
Yeah.
Was it an NRCS, like an EQIP?
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes.
Great. Back when the feds understood where food came from and that maybe you want to encourage people.
6 months ago?
I know. Weird.
Great peach year, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, has it been a bad peach year for other people?
I think it depends. I think it was hit or miss.
Oh, yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about peaches this year, and I've had a lot of good peaches this year.
Been dry, so the disease hasn't been...
We've had a very good year after many bad ones. Yeah. Just no harvest recently, but this year we have harvest, and the peaches are delicious.
It feels like the peaches are one of our most vulnerable crops. Like, it really is literally like there will be zero peaches from here to Georgia, or like... Mm-hmm. It could be the greatest peach year ever.
Yeah, that seems to be nature anyways.
Yeah.
It's great because folks are getting that whole diversity of fruit, veg, and flowers here.
Yeah.
It's great.
Do you have a favorite season? You know, you're doing winter markets, you're doing farmer's markets, you got the CSA. Is there a time of year when you're
winter.
Like, winter? Because then you get to really relax?
I get to relax. I get to read.
I'm going to say winter. It used to be, oh, my God. It's winter.
Winters in Boston were horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny, but it's true.
People. But we like all the seasons. Yeah, they're great.
Anything else you want to show us?
You want to take a look inside the greenhouse?
Yeah, sure.
If we have coyotes, we have no deer. But if you have coyotes, you have no melons.
Because they love the melons?
Yes, they love the melons and they love pears. And they will climb, they will actually pull pears off the trees.
Wow.
They really like them.
Do they howl wildly when they get to the melons and the pears like they do when they get a kill?
It's scary too.
It's scary as all get out. Oh my word.
Oh yeah. It's really.
Ew. Yeah.
Haunting.
It's
haunting. Your windows are open and. Yeah.
So then we have a dog. If the coyotes start, now the dog has to start. And he actually tries to mimic the howl. It's very funny. He's turning into a coyote. I think he wants to join them.
We're at Coyote Hill Farm in Bernardston with Irvin and Gloria Melulaney, and a local hero spotlight with Jennifer Kaur from CESA.
Speaking of, like, we don't end up at a lot of farms that have both orchard and actual produce. How different is it maintaining the orchard from maintaining, like, your regular fields?
Well, they fit together pretty good because you don't have to do too much in the orchard during the summer. And then the harvest season comes and you have to start picking in the orchard, but things are slowing down in the fields. So they fit together pretty good.
Nice.
You see the cracks in the greenhouse? We had horrible winds last winter and they blew off the panels.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
the screws had worked themselves loose over 20 years. It was terrible. We woke up one morning and looked down and saw the panels had flown off. The poor tomatoes were shriveled.
I'm just noting the passive solar design on your house here. That's great. Really thoughtful.
Yeah. The same with our greenhouses. As we go in, you'll see we have 92 55-gallon drums on the back side.
Oh, yeah, wow.
And that keeps the heat in. It doesn't freeze in there with no heat, except if it gets down below zero, then it'll freeze in pockets.
And then do you heat it then, or do you have a heating system if that needs to happen? Or
we have a wood stove, but it doesn't work. Pump up the temperature more than 5 degrees.
These barrels will they'll heat up when it heats up in here, and then they'll retain the heat?
Yeah,
that's a really cool way to do it. I've never seen anybody do it like that. Yeah, they're all black.
Yeah.
It smells so tomatoey in here. I love it. And the basil over there, too. I feel like I'm embodied by a Caprese salad.
And I'm curious if there's other ways that, like, your science former life influences the practices you have on the farm, because we don't see a lot of farmers doing this.
What about you, Gloria? Did you bring your science to this?
No, this was Irvin. He I think, has been reading about,
passive solar.
He just wanted to try it, and it's, this you can see by the dust, 20-something years old. It's still no maintenance. Just sits there.
You don't even have to change the water, probably, right?
No.
Never change.
It's an interesting scientific study.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on in there.
Are other folks learning from you? Like, have you had opportunities to mentor other farmers who are interested in this?
We actually had some tours come by from Greenfields Community College. We had a couple of professors who would come. They were very interested in the solar aspects of the greenhouse and our house, which is also passive solar.
Yeah, which meaning there's no panels. You're just using the available sunlight and creating interesting actual greenhouse effect, or, you know, like these barrels here, you know, to radiate heat in a way. That's cool. Yeah. Which, when you're worried about solar and the precious metals that go into making it, you know, there are some other things you can experiment with that are little to no influence on the planet.
And have existed for hundreds of years.
It's almost like we need the sun to survive. Yeah. And we learn how to use it better.
Like other folks before us maybe figured out how to harness that energy without all of this extra stuff.
Yeah. Says the guy with the electric car out in the, and the solar panels on my house 15 minutes from here.
I want to show you this.
It's immediately 30 degrees colder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cold storage in here.
Yeah, and this is where our CSA picks up.
Oh, cool.
One person is late.
Take a picture of that name.
We won't shame you, Dee Dee Schill. But
is
it's funny.
Is that not Dashiell?
Yeah,
Dashiell. Oh, Dashiell. Oh, yeah. It's hard for me to read that. So it looked like a lowercase d.
Wait, so I feel like I'm letting out the cold air. But
yeah, you are.
This is also. Oh, okay. So you have a cool bot type.
Yeah,
situation.
A cool bot. Okay. Keep it at 55.
It's funny that all their names are here, and then their $20 goes right under their names.
Yeah,
it's like the tooth fairy for CSA.
It is.
So fun.
Here, grab their share, it's all self-serve, they leave their cash under their name, and they're off.
They're going.
Then you don't even have to talk to them if you don't want to talk to people.
Why do I think that's not the case?
That is just, we like bumping into them when they come, but, you know, it's freeing for us. We don't wait around, you know, and they come whenever they can, and it all works.
So you have a very limited CSA. Does that mean that if somebody wants to become part of your CSA, they have to fight one of the current members battle royale, plus Squid Game style, and then take their space?
We've not had this issue. No. But we would make room, for sure.
And I assume you have a lot of regular farmers market customers that you've had for years.
Some very loyal customers.
Yep.
It's sort of like we are a state of pretty small farms, really, small and sort of medium scale farms.
That's
true. These small farms make a really big difference because that's all economic activity that's sticking right here and keeps circulating. Yeah. And it's real.
Too.
It's palpable.
It is healthy, too. Yeah.
I wanted to be able to make a living when I started out here.
Yeah.
It wasn't possible to, you know, fortunately I had a little bit of retirement from Harvard, and it made all the difference.
Right.
But just for two people and 1 acre, it's just not possible.
No. You know,
we made $30,000, which this day and age is not livable on.
Right.
Really.
Which goes to show you how hard it is to be a farmer. If farming is something that you have either grown up doing or you've decided to do from Jump Street as opposed to another career and then moving into farming.
Yeah.
So, farmer kids, get a real job and then become a farmer. No, I'm just kidding. Do whatever you want. Follow your dreams.
I mean, that is the lesson that we've learned here today.
Or I think it's also part of this conversation about what do we pay for food and how does the, how does that prioritize in our whole list of things? And we have a whole national conversation to have about that because some things are a little out of whack if it's that hard to sustain yourself.
It would be nice if, you know, a couple could make a living instead of having a farm that has to be, you know, 20 acres like Piccadilly or Red Fire, that, you know, they can make a living because they have workers. But just to, for two people to make a living, I think it's very difficult.
So then the model that we see so often here in the Pioneer Valley is one person who works off farm to get the benefits and the, pay the mortgage, et cetera, and the other person, it's that is a challenge for growth and sustainability, and it's lonely for that person, too, that's on the farm. So.
Are you speaking from experience?
No, just, I mean, well, and we see it over and over and over again. Yeah. It's a really common model.
And I think about what you said regarding priorities, there also needs to be a shift where just because we are able to get things from super far away doesn't mean that that should be the standard for, like, bringing in to the markets what we have. Maybe we don't have tomatoes in December. Like, maybe we just don't. Yeah. And, like, maybe we don't have certain things at this time of year in order to try and support the local agricultural community a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's both on consumers and on middle markets that are, like, supplying produce in a more easily accessible way in case you don't have a car to get to a farm.
100%. And thinking about the two markets that you two are engaged in, I think as a community and as a society, thinking about farmers markets as places to get your food and not places to necessarily just get a kebab and chit chat, which I think is wonderful and very attractive, but we need to get our food from our farmers markets also. Yeah. And that's
more people thought like you.
If only you ran an organization that's sheer goal was to get more people to think like that.